Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, and today we pause from the headlines to talk about the three things each of us are most thankful for as we head into celebrating Thanksgiving tomorrow with our loved ones and family members and friends. And, Jim, it's been a very eventful political year, to say the least. And I'll start with one that seems like it's probably been a little bit longer than a year, but it's actually been less than that, and that's that the Republicans control the House of Representatives. And I know that I've been very critical at times of the leadership, especially when it comes to some of these big deals that they tried to make on the debt ceiling and the continuing resolution earlier in the year when I thought they could have pushed for more. But in the end, it's way better than what we would have had. And I think they've done a great job, although getting almost no attention for it, of trying to roll back these excessive regulations. They repealed the president's health care plan. All of this, of course, dying in the Senate. And so you wonder, how much have they actually accomplished? Well, compared to where we were in the last Congress, gridlock is a beautiful thing. And just because the Senate has not acted on these things doesn't mean the House hasn't done, for the most part, everything that they should have done, especially, as I mentioned, on regulations. They've held the line on taxes, as we mentioned earlier in the week, with the supercommittee. Obviously, if we can get a Republican-controlled Senate in 2012, hold the House, and make Obama a one-term president, a lot more positive things can be done. But stopping the bleeding is about the most that we could have expected, given where we stood in this current Congress. And hats off to House Republicans for giving us a chance to make progress if we can do well next year.
An excellent choice, Greg. Interesting, I would note that when I was on the cruise last week, I asked the audience there, and these are, you know, diehard National Review readers, conservatives. If there's anybody in the room who was not registered Republican, I'd be kind of surprised. And I said, you know, so how do you guys feel about Boehner, and how do you feel about Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell? And there was a lot of golf claps, which was a way of saying, you know, and I specifically the topic I wanted to ask people was, you know, are they pleased? Are they, you know, infuriated? And most folks seem to think that Boehner and McConnell are doing about as well as they can with the limited circumstances they have. And that is, you know, McConnell does not have a majority. Boehner has a very diverse caucus. He keeps sending bills out and they keep dying in the Senate. Even if they did get something through, there's a good chance Obama would veto it. So there seem to be increasingly reasonable expectations that if you really want to see a conservative agenda enacted, you have to get the presidency. You have to get a Republican majority in the Senate. I kind of salute the base for getting their heads around that concept. If you had to ask me what am I thankful for in terms of Republican leadership these days, I'm going to go with the governors. We're seeing in some of the state capitals, and you know, listeners to this podcast and readers at NRO know that I now have a shrine in my home office to Bobby Jindal. I sacrifice crayfish to it every night. People know that piece I wrote for the magazine, writing about the comeback of Louisiana and all the ways that they have made really important and hopefully lasting reforms in their education and the way the state government works in terms of economic development, in terms of spending. I said it was the happiest story I've ever been able to write, and it was certainly a state that certainly needed it post Katrina. So I think when you see examples like this that demonstrate that conservative governance can work and conservative governance can get results in places you might not expect it, I think we can throw into the category what Christie's doing up in New Jersey. I think Governor McDonald is doing a terrific job here in Virginia. If you want to see where the real action is, you look at the state houses, and I'm very pleased by that, and hopefully we'll get a bit of that in the White House starting in 2013. So,
yeah, that's certainly true. And my second thing I'm thankful for politically really is pretty much an echo of what you just said. But it kind of goes to the big debate we saw at the state level this year, not typified anywhere better than Wisconsin, where Scott Walker took so many slings and arrows, as did Republican legislators. I mean, you watched 14 Democratic state senators literally abandon the state in an effort to make sure that pretty reasonable changes to the collective bargaining process and pension and benefits contributions and so forth would not be implemented. In the end, they were. It stood up to court challenge, and Scott Walker will now face his own recall effort. So this isn't over yet. It wasn't successful at every state level. John Kasich got hammered in the referendum in Ohio, but being a leader in a difficult economic environment where there really are no easy choices and courage is a requirement, sometimes that happens. And boffo job to a lot of these Republican governors for having the courage to not just accept the status quo and doing what they thought was necessary to do, regardless of how successful it was in the end.
I'm going to take a flip side. This will be a part of my characteristically cynical approach to Thanksgiving gratitude. I am thankful that Occupy Wall Street turned out to be exactly what we thought they were, which is a way of saying that, look, you look at two of the issues that they have raised, and you know, I'm going to take two of them kind of in isolation. One would be the TARP bailouts, and obviously the idea of giving large banks large amounts of money to effectively save them from the consequences of their own bad decisions. And I think, you know, you don't have to be a flaming liberal to look at executive compensation and have a certain wariness, particularly in cases where it is completely not tied to performance. If you, if your company is doing fantastic, you're innovative, you're pleasing your customers, you're finding new ways to bring, you know, products to market at prices that beat the competition, hey, more power to you. I have no problem with that. It's when you see the giant multi-million dollar salaries and signing bonuses and all that stuff, and then you flop. When you run your company as if you were, say, Jets number one draft pick or something like that, you know, when you totally flop and you get unbelievably compensation and a big golden parachute, I don't think you have to be a crazy left winger to look at that and say, hey, wait a minute, that's not just is that not fair, that's not respecting the shareholders, that's not respecting all the people who work for that company, that's not respecting that's not really the way free market is supposed to work. And that's supposed to be, you know, kind of loot your own company. There were some legitimate areas for the Occupy Wall Street crowd to harness economic frustration and kind of take a populist tone. I think when you look at the poll numbers right now, Greg, I think these people have botched it. I think they've exposed themselves for who and what they are, which is a bunch of you know, unbathing ruffians, or is it, you know, the preferred phrase up on Twitter is that these are lice-infested, Nazi-endorsed rape camps. It's turning into Lord of the Flies in some of these places. I'm glad they cleared out some of these parks. We've seen some really ugly stuff. And the idea, it's fascinating. We're several months into this, and they still don't have anything resembling a legislative agenda other than, I want stuff, and give me more stuff. By the way, the best joke that I've heard recently was from Iowa Hawk, who said, the difference between Occupy Wall Street and my 401k is that my 401k took a bath on Wall Street within the last 3 years. So,
great.
Putting that into perspective, I am glad Occupy Wall Street did not make the most of this opportunity. And they revealed themselves, you know, our opponents on the left, at least the snot-nosed, nose-ringed, trustafarian folks, are every bit the insufferable folks we think they were.
You can see that the declining support for Wall Street, Occupy Wall Street, is being reflected in the comments of Republicans now. At first, they were very timid to be overly critical of it. Now you have Peter King saying they're losers living in the dirt, and Newt Gingrich telling them to get a job right after they take a bath. And so it's clear that the air is coming out of the balloon there, and it couldn't happen anytime sooner. So on to the last one now, and this one is yet to actually be determined of how thankful I am that this is happening, Jim. But I'm thankful that the process is underway, and that's that the Supreme Court of the United States early next year will be hearing a long series of oral arguments on the president's health care plan. And right in the middle of the summer, right in June, right before convention season, we're going to get a decision from the Supreme Court on whether the individual mandate is constitutional, mandating Medicaid expansion to states. There's a couple different aspects here, but a lot of this is finally coming to a head. We previewed it from the moment that really this legislation passed. It would be great to win a strong Republican majority and the White House to make sure that even if the court for some reason does uphold this, it can be repealed. But a lot of folks see the courts as the real best chance to roll this back here sooner rather than later. And I'm cautiously confident, but confident nonetheless, that this will actually happen in some way, shape, or form. If we don't get the whole thing scrapped, I think a lot of big pieces of it will get scrapped, and that's something to be thankful for.
A very good selection, Greg. I'm going to go with an unusual choice, but let me kind of walk you through the thinking on it.
Okay.
I am thankful for what has been a dramatic and I think generally illuminating season of Republican presidential debates. There are some cycles in which the debates really aren't that important or decisive. There are a lot of ways you can get your message to voters. You can do it by retail politicking and spending a lot of time in these primary states. You can do it with an ad war and by just flooding the airwaves with commercials. I think you look at this very dramatic Republican primary season. Almost every candidate has had some moment where they've been on top of the polls, and a lot of them have had moments where they've, you know, sunk down in the polls. I think generally it has coincided with their debate performances, that generally if you have good debate performances, they can fuel you to the front runner status, as I think Herman Cain has done, and I think Newt Gingrich has done. I think you could even argue that that Michelle Bachmann's brief time, about a month or so in front runner or near front runner status, was driven by the fact that she came across as such a passionate fighter in these debates. Then, of course, she said that Gardasil causes retardation, and that had political consequences. And it ended up, you know, some folks who jumped off her bandwagon. And so I think these actually have been very illuminating debates. And we've seen a lot of these candidates at their very best and at their very worst. And I think it says that the Republican base is tuned into this. They're taking this decision very seriously. They are probably looking for a not Mitt candidate because, as I said, some have had high moments and low moments. Mitt is, for all the inconsistency of his positions, he's very consistent in his poll numbers. He is Mr., you know, 20-something percent. But I think it is good. I think it says something about the state of the party, that everybody is paying attention, that they are that they have enthusiasm, but they are also a certain wariness, that when somebody starts making mistakes, i.e. Herman Cain, I think, had some bad debates. I think the fact that he kept insisting, you know, if you have questions about 999, visit my website. I can't explain it to you here in the debates. Everybody who doesn't like it is just misunderstanding it. Newt Gingrich is hitting some turbulence right now with the Fannie and Freddie lobbying. All of these guys, you know, I think generally when you've seen somebody sink in the polls, they've generally done something to trigger that. You know, I don't think there's been any unfair drop off in poll numbers. Look at Rick Perry, you look at Bachman, you look at all these folks. So I think the debates have actually been pretty good for the party. I don't think we can argue whether it's been healthy for their poll numbers, but I think in a democracy, this is the way it's supposed to work. The people are supposed to pay attention. They're supposed to chew over what you're presenting and make their decisions accordingly. We have not had a coronation in this process, and I think that is, in the long run, good for the party.
Yeah, it'll be good for the party in the long run. It'll be good for the nominee to be well-tested in the long run, mm-hmm. whoever that is as well. And obviously, in a very difficult year in a lot of ways politically, certainly economically, there are some things to be thankful for. So that's happy. And obviously, as much as we love politics, I know Jim and I, and I'll obviously give him the chance to say this in a moment, I certainly am very grateful. The Lord has blessed us in many ways, with family and friends and work and a three martini lunch, Jim. So it continues to be a lot of fun, and hope you have a great Thanksgiving with your family.
I completely concur, Greg, and I just want to say, look, this is in this day and age, you have to be thankful for everything you have. You know, this is a good time to hold your family close, hold your loved one close, thank your coworkers for being everything they have. Greg, I want to thank you for handling all of the hard part of the three martini lunch, all the tech stuff, everything on your end. So all I have to do is show up and hopefully be insightful and funny. I hope I've done that for you guys. And I would say, you know, my final thanks will be thank you guys for listening.
Absolutely. Thanks to our listeners. Thanks, Jim, for being a whole lot more than funny. He contributes more than he admits to this show. But we look forward to talking to you all again on Friday for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch. We'll see you then.